We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
Elmora hammers one foul to the stands left side. Look out. Oh, a fan got nailed, and that is a very scary thing. Oh, man. Oh. It was a young fan, and it looked like the mother or the father running that child up to the emergency area here in Houston. And I'm sick to my stomach right now. Yep. Albert Almora Jr. is down on one knee and sobbing. He's got he's got young children of his own. I'm sick to my stomach after watching that. It was a solid line drive, whistling beyond the third base dugout into the stands. And before anyone could get in the way of the child, I didn't see exactly where it hit the youngster, but you could tell by the reaction of everyone around him that it was a solid blow. That is awful.
Middays on the Score.
That was two nights ago. Pat Hughes here on Sports Radio 670 doing a very professional and human job of describing what he saw. And that story, that issue is continuing to resonate nationally, even more so taking on a larger life throughout Major League Baseball.
That was the first time I had heard Pat's call. That gave me chills.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Did you see it live?
I did not.
Yeah.
I only saw it because of Almora's reaction. That was the first clip I saw, was him sobbing. But I still haven't seen the screaming liner.
Yeah, I saw it live and heard it live and wanted to throw up just because. And we saw were the reactions.
Yeah.
But the mystery of those reactions, thinking, oh my God,
how bad is it?
Yeah. If they're doing that, if he's screaming, oh my God, and then sobbing, these racking sobs, what just happened?
Like, yeah.
I'm imagining someone's head exploded.
Right. I know you're not joking about that either.
No, I'm not.
No, that's what you envision. And
yes.
Anytime there's a liner off camera like that, you're really hoping, okay. Are they going to proceed with the game and everything's okay? Oh, good.
Yeah, we had Jed Hoyer on these airwaves yesterday, who I thought was tremendous in discussing this and saying that. And we took some calls yesterday. This has engendered some really awful takes, really bad stuff from some selfish and awful people who simply seem to want natural selection to take fans out at games because it's just their responsibility. The idea that kids shouldn't be at baseball games, that it somehow is the parents were at fault. But Jed Hoyer did a great job explaining how hard it's 110 mile an hour line drive that players with gloves who are trained baseball players have a difficult time handling. And it's been fascinating to watch the story. For those looking for an update, the latest that we hear is that 4-year-old girl is continuing to recover in a hospital in Houston. That's all that we know. That we've heard mostly optimistic takes on that. So I guess so far so good. And I imagine no news being good news at that point. But Albert Almora has said that he wanted to be in touch with her. And it's been a very real, stark, and sobering story. And yet another reminder, baseball's got to take some further precautions, and fans need to be very, very aware of the dangers of some of these games.
Well, I like what you wrote at 670thescore.com about this protecting the players as well.
Yeah.
That cannot be minimized. It, because you see these line drives all the time, this possibility that you would do that or that would happen is real. And Jed Hoyer, understanding the team dynamic of that, the business side of that you want your customers to be safe at a game, and your point that teams are asking you to look elsewhere, forget make a play, which is just gibberish to begin with, that you've got to be able to just protect these people from the dangers that are there.
As we talk national baseball, let's go to the Alpamonte Ford hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Jessica Mendoza, who is on Twitter at Jess Mendoza, is the analyst for Sunday Night Baseball and baseball operations advisor to the New York Mets. Jessica, how are you doing?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Good. I have Great. To say, when I looked at the reason why you are making these appearances, you are a woman after my own heart. I had no idea that you were a fishing evangelist as well.
Well, it's something I did as a kid, and I've actually connected with it, because it's been about 20 years since I've been fishing, and this year I realize how important it is for us to disconnect, especially when we're always talking about how busy we are, all of us, right? It doesn't matter what we're doing. And to be honest, as a female, I feel like a lot of times we're intimidated because it feels like such a man's sport. But my mom's the one that taught me how to fish, and now I'm teaching my boys how to fish. So it's been something really fun.
Where did you learn?
I learned from my mom when I was 5. She would take me pier fishing.
But literally where? I'm talking saltwater, freshwater?
Ocean, yeah, saltwater. I'm a SoCal girl, so we go out on the ocean out in Ventura, California, and we go out to the pier, and we'd hang out. My feet would hang over the edge of the pier, and I don't ever even remember catching anything, but I remember the fun of just sitting there with my mom and her telling me stories. And, I mean, can you beat a view looking out of the beach and the waves crashing on? I mean, I can remember the smells. There's a very distinct smell for anyone who's been pier fishing of what a pier smells like, kind of a mix of, like, bird poop and fish and all kinds of stuff. And I can close my eyes and remember it like it was yesterday.
My uncle lives in Willow, Alaska, which there's some very good salmon fishing up there.
Imagine.
One of the couple of times that I've been myself caught a salmon up there. And you're right, the smell, that'll stay with you a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
It also bring bears. And this is for National Fishing and Boating Week, June 1st through the 9th, a national celebration that is highlighting the importance of recreational boating and fishing. But to baseball, Jessica, the Cubs fans have seen a lot of this broadcast so far. What do you make of what you've seen from the Cubs and where they are now after a couple of bumps in the road this past week?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the division is still, you know, up for grabs, which you guys are well aware. And I think with the Cubs is, you know, they're this talented team that, you know, goes on these runs where it's like they can out-hit everyone, their pitching is all in sync, and then it feels like whether it's the bullpen or something falls apart the next week, it's like up and down and all over. And I know if I were living in Chicago, it's like you want them to just grab this division and run with it. But as you see, the Brewers especially, the Cardinals, you can't, of course, count them out. And even Pittsburgh's still hanging on, you know. So this division very much still up for grabs. But we will have Chicago still coming up. I feel like we've had you guys, 3 out of 4 weekends. We'll have you guys again in L.A. And it's been fun to see this team. But I think it'll be more exciting as we head to the middle of the season and then the back half where this Chicago team ends up.
So, Jessica, where do you feel like the Cubs can be a little bit more consistent as you talk about these runs and sort of the engine starting and stopping? In your mind, from what you've seen, how do they sustain it?
Bullpen. I know that's not the sexy stat. And honestly, I think pitching overall. I think Yu Darvish is that big, and I think he goes tonight. He's that guy that you want to just, I don't know if he'll be the ace, but you want the talent to just be there consistently. And then you look at the bullpen, and I feel like it has been a strength at times, and it's also been very inconsistent. And I know the offense will be there. I think the Cubs have one of the best defenses ever. Javier Baez leads that. But to me, it's the pitching and just the inconsistent, you know, outings that you're going to get from some of your key main characters.
Are you the pop culture reference police in that booth right now? Because it always seems like whether it's a Caddyshack or Aerosmith or something, you're the one who just always has a comment like, man, can we freshen these up a little bit, old guys?
Poor Matty V, right? Matty's always referring to like 1970s pop culture. I was born in the 80s, so I'm always like, what? And then it'll take me a second, I'm like, oh, he just made a joke. He's making some reference. And he'll just like, he drops it in out of nowhere. And I love it because the game always does need to, you know, be light and not just be about baseball every single pitch, every single word. But I get on him. I'm like, can we just get a little more updated? Like maybe even something 90s, like get into the 2000s, get that younger audience. I just like to give him a hard time.
Yeah, serious question, though. The three-person booth is hard enough. With Buster only being involved, it becomes essentially, in a way, a four-person booth with a lot to be described and prepackaged stuff that goes on. And it's not easy to do what you guys are attempting to do. And one thing, this is just my pet peeve, and I've noticed it, and maybe it's sort of observational bias at this point, but something happens and you have an extended and lucid analysis, clearly well-researched, and then A-Rod jumps in with like a, well, as a player, and I'm like, dude, let that breathe a little bit. React to what she just gave you here instead of player-splaining it. So would you like throw a pen at him next time he does that?
Throw that on. He's right next to me.
I know. Just smack him in the head or something. It just, because it always sounds to me like I want to get his response to that. All the, it's like you put in a lot of hard work, and I'm nodding along. All right, that's really good stuff. I don't need to hear some story about what, as a player, here's what happened to me.
Well, I think, I mean, even right now, I'm actually at the Women's College World Series, and we have a, you know, three-person booth with Holly Rowe on the sideline, and it's a challenge always, because you have what you want to say, you have your own reaction, you also have, you know, the timing, right? You have to get in between pitches. So sometimes if you let something breathe, you might lose the moment, and the next thing it's gone. And I agree with you, it can be frustrating, I'm sure for all of us, because you always want to get in what you want to say. But, I mean, even being here in Oklahoma City doing college softball, I mean, it's me, Michelle Smith, and Beth Mullins in the booth. We've got Holly Rowe on the sideline. And there's always stuff going on. Oh, there's the game that's happening, right, that you want to also just allow to breathe in itself without even making comments. So it's a challenge, and it's something that I'm definitely up for, but every game presents its own unique challenges.
Jessica, as the season is going on, how are you doing in that sort of auxiliary role as the Mets front office advisor? What are you enjoying about that and mixing the two responsibilities together?
Well, it's been fun. I mean, this week has been fun. I mean, it's juggling a lot. I mean, we had Cardinals Braves on Sunday. I flew straight to L.A. for the Mets playing the Dodgers and was able to sit down with Brody Van Wagenen, and we got the draft coming this coming Monday, so to be able to kind of dive in. Watching college baseball, seeing, you know, who are we going to go for, who's going to be our first round pick, and then, you know, kind of later in the draft, who are the guys that, you know, we've all seen from these drafts that come out to be these gems out of nowhere that not everyone knows about. So to me, kind of understanding, and what I would love, but we have our Women's College World Series Finals starting Monday, is, you know, I'd love to sit there in the draft room, but I'll be actually Yankees Red Sox Sunday night, and it sounds like a crazy schedule. Yankees Red Sox Sunday night, and I'll be flying back here to Oklahoma City for the finals. But I would love to be in that draft room with the Mets to be able to kind of understand, you know, everything that goes on in selecting the future guys for a franchise.
Jessica, we really appreciate you taking the time to join us today. This was fun. Thank you.
Yeah. Make sure, guys, check out pickmefishing.org. It's a cool website, and it'll allow you to kind of see all the cool stuff. Get educated, even if you're going up to Alaska or you're pier fishing like me.
I already got my license, and I'm headed up to Saskatchewan later in the summer, so I will need more licenses.
I've been there, Saskatoon. I love it.
Well, we fly into Saskatoon, and then we take a plane that lands on an island in Reindeer Lake before the boats pick us up to take us to the lodge. So, looking forward to that.
Flying in? Wow, okay, that sounds amazing.
Uh-huh. Thanks, Jessica.
Thanks.
Jessica Mendoza, takemefishing.org is the place to visit there. We are going to talk to a basketball character, to say the least. We are going to get the inside opinion on the NBA Finals here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. It is Rich Campbell sitting in for Connor McKnight. Brian Scalabrine joins us next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
I think, well, number one, we turned the ball over 17 times. They got 17 points off those turnovers. You know, one of the keys coming into the game was to stop them in transition. You turn the ball over that many times, they're going to get out in transition. So, yeah, you usually do have Kevin there to throw the ball to, but I don't necessarily think the problem was our offense outside of the turnovers. We just got to be better all around the floor, and especially on the defensive end. And that starts with me.
Sorry.
We'll be better.
Good stuff from Draymond Green, and here to talk about that Toronto Raptors victory and perhaps a changing final series here is Brian Scalabrine, Radio.com Sports Insider. Brian has a new podcast out now on Radio.com, Big Time Basketball. You can check it out on Radio.com and the Radio.com app. You can find Brian weekdays on Sirius XM NBA. Brian, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. I'm up in Toronto, and nice little vibe in this city for their first finals appearance.
You didn't get to Jurassic Park last night? Hey, boy, the coverage was on that a lot.
Yeah, I walked threw it right before they let the people in. But, yeah, it's just a cool little environment. I think every NBA city, if they could, like this is right in the middle of downtown, should try to implement something like that. It does look like it gets pretty wild out there. I was inside the arena. I don't hang out outside and watch the games, but it would be a good experience to me to go out there and watch a game. I guess the people out there are just going absolutely crazy.
It's a hell of a defensive performance, I thought. They do such a good job switching screens. They anticipate some of those switches really well. And, man, they don't have one rim protector. Whoever is there in the rotation to get over, even when the extra pass was made by Golden State, every layup was challenged. There was even good contact without fouling. If they can keep that up, can't they make this a series maybe more so than a lot of us think?
Yeah, no, I think going into it, like, listen, we have to understand in this series what Game 1 meant to the Toronto Raptors. They had to win that game. Like, if Toronto loses that game, talk about overreaction. I mean, there's no way I could ever imagine them coming back. So they had to win Game 1, but they just did what they were supposed to do. I do agree with you. Defensively, they flew around. They did the same thing against Milwaukee, who seemed to get open shot against the Pistons, open shots against the Celtics, open shots against the Raptors for two games, but their defensive rotations were spot on. But that's assuming that the Warriors, or as we just heard Draymond Green, are not going to make some small adjustments. I didn't think that the Warriors passed the ball like they normally did. I didn't think they attacked this team with the familiarity that we've seen them playing Portland in the past, playing Houston in the past. I think they were, and even this year, a couple guys missed the regular season games when they played, when Toronto played Golden State in the regular season. And I think the Warriors were more feeling them out. And I think the Toronto Raptors were more playing out of emotion and desperation that they had to win the game.
Brian, what did you make of the Warriors' uncharacteristic sloppiness with the basketball at times? To credit Toronto's defense for sure, but we saw turnovers in the backcourt last night, turnovers in transition.
Miscommunications.
Yeah, very uncharacteristic. What did you make of that?
Well, when you say uncharacteristic, wouldn't you say as great as this Warrior team has been, it is their one flaw that they get like a little bit sloppy, a little bit lackadaisical with the basketball, and then, but they also have the ability to clean that stuff up. I just thought like the Warriors were in this mode of we're not super aggressive because we're trying to figure out where we're going to attack, and everyone's looking at different ways to attack. What they really needed to do was just play and then go back to the film and watch it, but they were kind of trying to figure it out on the fly. They did get it. Cousins, I mean, that was that phantom foul on Kyle Lowry. It was all ball. They never called it. But Cousins did get to the line late in the game. And as bad as the Warriors have played, as great as Toronto has played, he did have a chance to cut it in two. And those types of things, that's only, think about it, that's only a stop and a Klay Thompson scurry away from really all the pressure at that point going on Toronto. But every time the Warriors got close, it was a big stop defensively. It was a big shot. Pascal Siakam would drive to the basket, have a mismatch against Steph Curry. They did a really good job of executing and making big shots, big plays when they needed to. And it wasn't all just, hey, Kawhi Leonard, please save us once again.
The story we're watching is the tweak of the hamstring of Andre Iguodala. Because with Durant already out, if Iguodala isn't going or isn't at full strength, they're like out of wings at this point. I'm not quite sure
how they adjust.
Yeah, what happens?
Yeah, I don't know what they do defensively. Like offensively, like here's where I stand with the Warriors. They can do a lot of different things. They'll figure it out on the offensive end. Different guys can go in there and play different positions. You know, Draymond Green can play a lot more wing, and you can run different lineups. But defensively, like last night, I felt they overreacted to Kawhi Leonard. And the Warriors don't overreact to anybody. There are times they don't overreact to LeBron James. Why were they blitzing Kawhi Leonard 25 feet from the basket, 30 feet from the basket, which allowed Siakam to go off? But to me, I thought going into game two, they're like, they're not going to overreact to Kawhi Leonard. But with Iguodala out and Kevin Durant out, don't you kind of have to overreact to him because you just don't have the bodies now to send at him? If you're playing him one-on-one with guys who, like Alphonso McKinney or guys who are, and not Draymond Green, but anybody outside of that, I feel like Kawhi Leonard's going to have a huge advantage. He had a huge advantage over Klay Thompson, who's a really good defender, but Kawhi Leonard's just a different guy. He's so much stronger. So that this injury could come back to haunt the Warriors in a sense Now we're going to have to stay in rotation, and we're going to have to continue to give Marcus Gasol, Fred VanVleet, and Pascal Siakam, and Kyle Lowry as well, wide open looks, because we got to make sure we hold back Kawhi Leonard. So my assumption would be that he would play, and my assumption would be that they wouldn't continue to double-team Kawhi Leonard and try to make so much of an emphasis on taking him away and opening up the floor for everybody else.
What did you make of Leonard's game last night? 5 of 14 from the floor, but still 23 points and facilitated enough.
Yeah, he got to the free throw line a ton, and he did a really good job of when they were putting two on him. They had hard traps where he just got rid of the ball, and they had soft traps. And you guys know how those are. You got a guy in front of you and a guy on the side of you. Well, when he was in those situations, he held the ball, he remained poised, and he did things to get himself to the free throw line. Sometimes there was no space for him to work, and he went into that gap, and he sort of just makes his own space when he's out there. So a lot of people are thinking that he could play a lot better. I thought he played great. I think getting to the free throw line is an underrated art that no one talks about when they look at final box scores, but getting to the free throw line is important. I mean, Steph Curry had a great game because he got himself to the free throw line. It allows you to get your rhythm. But I just think in general, once again, if the Warriors overreact to him, we've seen this in the past. When he was banged up in that Milwaukee series and the rest of the guys really stepped up, that changed the series. Like, how much trust did you have in the Toronto guys outside of Kawhi Leonard at the start of Game 4 when he's a little bit sick and he's a little bit banged up? Those guys deliver, and they beat Milwaukee by 18. I mean, Milwaukee's been steamrolling guys, and they beat those guys by 18 in Game 4, and that kind of changed everything for Toronto. If I was Golden State, I would try to hold back the role players as much as I can and make life just tougher for Kawhi Leonard, but make life tough without going into rotation.
I'm talking to Brian Scalabrine of Radio.com Sports here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show with Rich Campbell in for Connor McKnight today. Back to what you said about underappreciated ability to foul hunt when necessary. When I watched Curry, I thought there was a couple of in-between moments that he had because of the quality of Toronto's rim protection, where he's so clever and so quick and has such great sleight of hand. If he wants, he can reach around the defender to try to spin something high off the glass to try to get an angle or shoot that quick floater. Would he just be better off taking a James Harden approach and just blowing up and just Charlie Browning himself the moment he gets contact to get a couple of free throws?
Yeah, that's interesting, right? Because, like, we act like NBA players can just change on the drop of a hat. It takes like years and years of refining those skills. Like James Harden, if you ever go back and watch him at Arizona State, he was like that. He would draw contact. He would put his arms close to his body, put his arms out in front. He played a lot like Manu Ginobili did, who's like, you know, those crazy Euro steps. So you're like, Steph Curry can't just one day wake up and turn into, you know, James Harden. Like, Steph Curry has always practiced finishing and been a great finisher. Back, you read stories about him in junior high and how he used to spin the ball high off the backboard and floaters and all that stuff. So guys can't really change, but an underrated aspect of what Curry's game is his ability to finish at the rim. The year he won MVP, I think he shot 67% in that restricted area. And that's coming from a guy who's clearly undersized, and he's a good athlete. I mean, probably a great athlete when it comes to human beings, but in the NBA, he's probably a very average athlete when he's out there. Great, great shape. He's in great condition, but he's not going to be able to change his offensive habits just on a drop of a hat. But he does kind of do that, kick my hip out, throw, you know, kick my legs out, you know, try to get to the free throw line. And he does it, obviously, different than James Harden. And James Harden probably wouldn't be able to do, you know, what Steph Curry does as far as drawing the contact off the pull-up jumper.
It's funny you say that. One of my criticisms of Derrick Rose's game, even in his prime, even at his peak, was because of how he developed on street courts. He never would evince contact because he was so strong and so powerful. Nobody cared. Yeah. Where he was playing, nobody cared. And it was up and over and through everybody and dunked that stuff. I almost swore there.
That's amazing. You know? That is truly, truly amazing that you noticed that. I've never heard another analyst say that. And when I was on his team, I used to tell him that all the time. He would get punched in the face.
Yes!
He would take the punch, and his eyes would go, like, back to the rim. And I thought the exact same thing as you. People who grow, and that's why this league now, which I'm not saying is soft or anything like that, I'm just saying the league has changed. People grow up now playing 5-on-5 with referees. You didn't flop when you play in the street corners. You didn't do that stuff. You played and you played through contact because, you know, every time you call a foul, it had to be a real foul. If not, you'd have a big argument about it. But, like, guys now that grew up playing in the AAU culture with referees, like, they practice flopping. They practice drawing contact. And I thought the exact same thing when I was a teammate with his. I thought, how are you – like, I get that you're upset that you don't get to the free throw line more. But of all the players I've ever played with, you sell contact the least. I've never seen a guy who takes hits so hard, yet he would just, like, play through it. And for an official – sometimes these guys got to be sold on it. You know, you got to hit the ground. You got to roll around. You got to act like you're stumbling and you got knocked out for them to go to the replay monitor. Derrick Rose would play through all of that. And that's amazing that you would bring that up because I've never heard anybody else talk about that. And I probably wouldn't have talked about that if I wasn't a teammate of his. So you are now in my top five. You're my Mount Rushmore analyst.
There you go. That's what I need to hear.
At least when it comes to Derrick Rose, you're on my top five analysts of you're my Mount Rushmore of analysts.
Can it go to body type when you talk about Curry and being undersized? There are times where he's pulling himself off the deck and he's getting hammered. Yes, he goes to the line. He's 14-14 last night, but there's a physical element and a physical toll that takes. Or are you just talking selling it?
Now I'm going to drop you out of the top five.
Different guy. Dan already dropped the mic and left the room.
I coached Curry for a year. And I'm in the – so I'm walking by the weight room, and he's over there lifting. And I see – it looked what looked like to me like 165, and he was front squatting 165 for some five. And I'm already gassing him up because I think he's some scrawny kid like you see him, right?
Yeah,
so I'm like, all right, Steph, doing your thing in the weight room. And as he went down and came up, you know the sound that 245 plates make when they're touching each other? They kind of like jingle, ding, 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 like that. And I had to take a second look and think, okay, wait a minute. Something's wrong here. I'm hearing 45-pound plates clip each other, and I'm seeing Steph Curry front squat, which I thought it was 165, and I look over, and he's doing 245, and he's doing them for reps of five, perfect. And I almost fell down.
Wow.
I mean, I lift every day, and I worked hard in the weight room. I had to, and I'm a big guy and all this stuff, and I am not even getting anywhere close to that. So when you say he's a little bit scrawny and not physical, he is, out of all the athletes I've ever played with, Derrick Rose, you know, I've played with Pierce, a Hall of Famers, Kevin Garnett, all these guys. Steph Curry's individual workouts would floor these guys. Ray Allen, legendary workout guy. Steph Curry would floor Ray Allen in an individual workout. And when it comes to strength and stuff like that, he would floor these guys as far as how strong he is as well. He just doesn't look it, but it doesn't mean he isn't actually, like, he's just cut from a different cloth. Like, he is just as much as an athletic phenomenon as a LeBron James, but people have a hard time seeing that.
Scal, before we let you go, we always want to get a national perspective on our woebegone Chicago Bulls. Where are they in this thing? What's their proximity to a championship, and how does the league feel about this team? Where do you go from here?
Well, first, championships, like, okay, there's a little bit of luck into that, right? Let's talk about Toronto and them getting Kawhi Leonard and becoming available and them going all in. That's not an easy thing to do, but you want to be relevant, right? That's what really your question is. When can we have a conversation of whether the Bulls are on the cusp of winning or, you know, what else, like, what small moves can they make? Well, I do like their pieces. I do think they need a point guard. Obviously, they did not get lucky during the lottery. They could have bounced up and got a John Morant. They didn't. It's just the way kind of the balls bounced. But, you know, I'm a Lauri Markkanen fan. I love Wendell Carter Jr. I think Otto Porter could be fine. They just got to get at lead guard position. They thought it was going to be Chris Dunn. You know, maybe a lot of people thought that. Maybe, you know, it's clear that he's probably not an elite guard in this league, but the Bulls can be a little bit aggressive, look out and maybe look to trade. Did you read that story on Bleacher Report about Lonzo Ball being kind of tied in? And I thought that story in general, which kept Anthony Davis and all like the kind of like the big name free agents, that had a lot of juice to it. Thought that would make a lot of basketball sense. So many people think of LeVar Ball when we talk about Lonzo Ball. But if you just extract LeVar from this scenario, he's a good player. He's a good defensive player. He gets other people involved. He could help the development of Zach LaVine and Lauri Markkanen. So it's just a lot of interesting things out there. But I think it all starts with, how are the Bulls going to get a lead guard, an elite guard that fits into the nucleus that they have around Markkanen and Wendell Carter as well as Zach LaVine? So that would be my first concern. And once they do that, we can start having a conversation of, now that they're relevant, let's start talking about what they would need to do to get a championship. But first, I just think you got to have a lead guard. And I don't know, those guys aren't easy to come by, but if you can get one, you got to figure out a way to do it. Maybe you have to give up their pick to get one. Maybe they draft a guy they believe in. But until they have a lead guard, let's save the championship conversations for later.
Brian, this is really fun, man. Thank you.
You got it, guys. Anytime.
Brian Scalabrine, Radio.com Sports Insider. Make sure you check out his new podcast out now on Radio.com. Big Time Basketball. Go check it out today, Radio.com and on the Radio.com app. This segment brought to you by the Chicago Dogs. Tickets now on sale for the Chicago Dogs, your premier minor league baseball team. Get in the game this weekend with Superhero Night Friday. Best postgame fireworks on Saturday and meet the team family Sunday. Tickets at thechicagodogs.com. The Chicago Dogs, baseball with everything. The Midday Midway is coming up. We still have giveaways. Got $1,000 cash, got a pair of tickets to see Dead and Company. But this will be your maiden voyage, Rich Campbell, on the Bernstein and McKnight Midday Midway.
I've got to recover after offending Brian about Steph Curry's physique. Like, I called him a pipsqueak here.
All right, I'm going to need the I'm Fat podcast, guys, because I've got a fast food item for which I am absolutely dancing and sky pointing. This is phenomenal. And I may have to take an L on a longtime pet peeve of mine because, unfortunately, language is fluid. What do you have?
I've got a Google Home story to share with you. I want to dig into, you know, Mr. Crossword over here.
Yeah?
A little bit.
Okay.
I feel like this is teed up for you. The Google Home, at least.
Okay.
And I don't know how much the National Spelling Bee registers on your radar.
I have a feeling I know where this is going based on the way they adjudicated the final.
Let's get into it a little later.
We'll do that right now. Midday Midway, next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Midday Midway brought to you by Hint Water. Hint is pure, still, or sparkling water infused with a variety of fruit essences, including watermelon, blackberry, and cherry. No sugar, no sweeteners, no calories. Available in your local grocery store or drinkhint.com. Hint, mouth-watering water. Boy, we've been busy today. Started off with Rich Campbell sitting in for Connor McKnight today. A lot of Bears stuff. The new information that we got about Trey Burton's sports hernia surgery.
Still need to know if you were going to offer that apology.
Yeah, I'm not certain.
I told you.
Because
I told you. I don't think you owe him one.
Yeah, I think that's the conclusion, right?
Yeah.
That we had what we had, we knew what we knew, we listened to what everybody said about it. I think our doubts based on the body of evidence were completely reasonable. And no one ever accused him of faking anything.
No.
You know, I may have thought it in the back of my head, may have insinuated that I was dubious, but I never really said it. Had I said it, I think I would definitely owe him an apology, but it was all really weird, and now we find out exactly what was wrong, how it manifested itself. But it did bring up the question that we asked, was there a little negligence in Matt Nagy sticking with a Trey Burton-centric game plan when he knew he wasn't going to have Trey Burton?
For as much as we would like the inquest to continue, it could. We could drag it on as long as we want, and Burton's not going to be back till maybe training camp.
We also talked about the Tribune list, how they're putting their top 100 together. Rich is a part of that. Baseball talk with Jessica Mendoza and basketball talk with Brian Scalabrine. Boys, we need a ruling on this. KFC has a new side dish. Or maybe it's not. Maybe it's an entree. In a bag that would normally contain fries or their potato wedges, they are now selling fried chicken skin. Just the skins.
Just the flour, the egg, the recipe.
Just the
and
batter.
The oil.
I want you to picture like a chicken chicharron. Like a fried pork skin, this is a bag, a wax paper bag of chicken skins.
Turns the bag translucent, I'm sure.
It better. They're only doing this in Indonesia, however. The snack is close to about a dollar, the equivalent. They're only doing it in Indonesia.
Sounds like a remote.
In the Philippines, they had done it before. They called it cracklings, which is kind of what it is. I am in 100% yes.
Did you ever try the Double Down from KFC? The one with it was a sandwich, but it was two patties. There was no bun. The two patties and all that was between it was bacon, cheese, and sauce. So you're holding the thing. You had to hold it through the paper because it was so gross to hold.
I did not
go the Double Down. Okay.
No, with KFC, I'm generally a purist. I generally will simply do original recipe, coleslaw, and mashed potatoes.
Okay. Okay.
The Double Down was good.
Was it?
That was something.
But guys, yes or no on chicken skins?
I'm in.
Rick and I have discussed this on the podcast. I have a weird, like, for whatever reason, fried chicken is my line. I'm like, oh, I could not possibly eat that horribly. And I go get 20 McNuggets. I don't know why chicken on the bone.
Different. Okay.
There's some weird hang up with me. So I would probably not just drive through and try these. But if we were to order a bag, you know, DoorDash or whatever from Indonesia, I would try them.
Okay. They should sponsor that, right?
DoorDash from Indonesia?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a big delivery fee.
Show content.
And you do fast food too, right?
I do fast food too much, as a matter of fact. I consider myself a sampler. I am intimately knowledgeable of the menus at all of these places. I have my favorites. Not a KFC within good location for me operating out of Lakeview.
Wait, isn't there...
Tell me where one is there.
I believe there's still one at Halstead and Diversey next to the Walgreens.
No. Burger King moved in.
Oh.
Yeah, Burger King moved in.
Because that was always...
And there's no drive-thru there either. You got to go inside.
But that parking lot's easy.
It very easy.
That was always the one that I... That's
the one. But yeah, it's a Burger King now.
You know, it's funny because I drive by it every day, but in the opposite direction, so I wouldn't know.
Yeah.
I never drive toward it.
Well, they had the Big King XL, which was that gigantic Big Mac knockoff that I thought was awesome. That was a few months ago now.
Might have to book somebody for a podcast.
All right, Dan, I want to know if you have, or if anybody behind the glass here has a Google Home, you know, a Google Home Mini, one of those smart home systems that you can just talk to and maybe get some information out of. You say no?
No, I don't have one, and I don't trust them because I think it would immediately be sending all of my personal information.
Your phone's already doing that.
I know it is.
The conspiracy theories aside, so we've got one in our house, and the result of this is that our 15-month-old son, his first word, I am not kidding, his first word was Google.
Oh, my God.
Yes, I have the video of it.
What a story for the times.
I can show you the video if you wanted to hear it. What happened was he turned one in February and everyone sang happy birthday to him. He loved happy birthday. So anytime he's upset, it's, hey, Google, sing happy birthday. Happy birthday is one of the three songs that Google knows. It's Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, the ABCs, and happy birthday. So now it's Google, sing me happy. You know, he wants happy birthday.
He's trying to activate it.
He's trying to activate Google in the home. Now, that's weird. Gets you a little sideways, like, yeah, it's not... He cannot say Dada or Mama yet, but he can say Google.
Well, he loves the machine more than you.
Well, that's right. The machine gives him everything he wants. Now, the other thing about this...
It's Pavlovian. I mean, if he knows if it's going to please him, if that's going to affect a pleasure center in his brain, it was motivation to learn the word.
No question. So the other part of this is that we use it. We use it to ask the weather. I mean, that's always. But, hey, Google... What sound does a dog make? You know, for your little kid. And ruff, ruff. But the Google Home uses totally authentic sounds. So it's not like, what sound does a dog make? Woof, woof. It is the sound of a dog. Now, if you say, hey, Google, what sound does a bird make? It will go, this is the North American robin.
Really?
Yes, it's very detailed.
So it's
the
banned.
Type and the genus of the animal that it gives you.
They're taking the fun out of animal noises
yes,
for kids.
Yes. I'm surprised you don't have one because as a crossword guy, an easy sort of, you know, ask it a question. Hey, Google, who was the vice president in 1890, whatever?
That's called cheating.
Well, I'm talking fact checking.
Ah.
After the fact, or something. I see.
Or if I'm doing my crossword puzzle game when I'm trying to write clues to things.
Of course, yes.
Instead of Wikipedia.
You're not going ahead of the fill-in.
Speaking of words, I think I may have to take an L on something, but not really. because dictionaries reflect usage. And when something is wrong enough, it becomes right.
I hope you're not going to where I'm afraid you're going here.
For example, the word irregardless is in some dictionaries because people use it to mean regardless. Now, this is something I've talked about all the time. I even got Dana Hale to do the same thing and continue to fight my battle on this. You stand at a lectern on a podium. That thing in front of you with the slanted top and the microphone, that is a lectern. Your feet are on the podium. However, Merriam-Webster Dictionary weighs in today. We are very sorry to inform those of you who care about this matter that the word podium can now, truly and without embarrassment, refer to what is also called a lectern. Podium, in its original English use, is an architectural term. A low wall serving as a foundation or terrace wall. One kind went around the arena of ancient amphitheaters, was a base for tiers of seats. Of course, the Greek pod, meaning foot, podiatrist. Plenty of people who would like to see the ideas of base and foot preserved. And we said, we have an apology to make. The word podium sometimes refers not to a thing you stand on, but to a thing you stand behind. You know the object. You're frowning deeply as you read this. You know the object as a lectern. It is a lectern, but lecterns are also referred to as podiums, at least in North America. This has been true since around the middle of the 20th century.
Jay Podium taking the cutler in just a couple minutes.
Says we have nothing to do with an expansion of the word podium to cover lecterns. Words frequently take on other meanings over time. It is our mandate to report those meanings if and when they become established. So there it is. It is now official. You idiots have ruined it. You've misused this word enough that you have gained it as a word. So screw you.
That was actually enough of a factor in our daily reporting from Hallis Hall because guys go to the lectern, stand on the podium all the time. And as you're writing the scene, you've got to make that distinction. I was really afraid you were going to say that they have acknowledged that the word woe can be spelled W-O-H.
I hate that.
That's the big one for me.
W-H-O-A.
Is how it is correctly spelled.
I know. People are spelling it W-O-A-H.
Yes.
My other pet peeve, yeah, has an H on the end. Yeah.
Otherwise, yay.
Like, my kids will text me yay. I'm like, yay what? What are you saying yay
yes.
for? Are you voting yes in parliament? I say, if you're gonna text me yeah, put an H on it.
So everybody needs to tweet at Dan_Bernstein, yeah without the H, and whoa with the H at the end.
Oh, there we go. Now.
So the National Spelling Bee was decided last night in suburban D.C.
Not really.
Yeah, not really. The reason I want to bring this up is because as part of that D.C. media group for so long, that the spelling bee is in your realm. You know, it's in the world you operate in. And the Associated Press writer who covered it for years, I mean, I want to say Joseph White covered at least 20 spelling bees. He was also the main Redskins writer when I was on that beat. And Joe was such a quirky guy that he insisted that the National Spelling Bee was always his favorite event of the year to cover. Well, anybody who was trying to watch pregame on ESPN of the NBA Finals last night, and I think it was even SportsCenter at the end of the game, you found that ESPN was still showing the spelling bee at like 11 o'clock last night.
And the judges were getting exhausted.
Yes, it ended up in an 8-way tie. It went on longer than any other bee has gone before. And it's so fascinating to read the media coverage of this because it's super intense. I mean, it's this niche world of ultra intense competitors. And you could probably argue the how unhealthy it might be to study the dictionary at age 10 or whatever. But
well, hello.
Yeah. Some of this media coverage from last night is awesome. ESPN's story, which pulls deeply from the AP, but this is a special one. They got a text message comment from a 13-year-old who was eliminated before this crazy final went down, who was She says, I was disappointed that I missed the finals by a whisker because to rub the salt in the wound even further, I knew every single word that they asked since this morning. And oh, she's texting God. This reporter, and she's like 13 years old. They have the executive director of the South Asian Spelling Bee, whose champion was part of this octet of winners, mm-hmm. who said, this would never have happened at our spelling bee in South Asia. They need to use harder words. There are words available. I mean, there's contention, animosity in these things. And it's, you know, it goes under the radar because it's a spelling bee, but the media coverage is funny.
It just makes me nervous. It makes me incredibly nervous to watch. I don't like it. I didn't like competing in spelling bees as a kid, and I didn't like losing because I could have gone to Great America, but I misspelled the word delinquent because I left the N out of it, and I knew it. I saw it in my head, and I just didn't say it, and then I realized I hate Great America, and I wouldn't have gone anyway, but I still wanted to win.
This thing took 5.5 hours in the semifinal round, and it never ended. So they just basically called it a tie. Apparently, they used to use a long written test to break ties, and they did away with it because it was too cumbersome. C-U-M.
Stop it. That is the Midday Midway. We're going to talk baseball with Jonah Carey. You know it's Friday when you hear Jonah at 11. Probably check in with Joe Ostrowski on the craziness in downstate Illinois right now as they try to get a sports gambling bill passed. We will fill you in on all of that. Bernstein and McKnight, he's Rich Campbell. Keep it here. You got the score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.